Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Steve, make sure to tell everyone at NFL Network that Ray Ratto is available for voiceover work at the network level should you need him to do so.
There's a slam dunk. Yep.
Aeneas Williams comes in and makes the hit that turns out ends a career.
Why did you ruin my day?
I'm sorry, but I had to ask, at what moment did you realize that you had watched him play his last play? Was it that night? Was there anything specific? Or in the coming days, weeks, and months, when did that become a football play that turned out tragically? Because it looked like just another hit.
Yeah, it was another hit. Aeneas Williams blitzed off the edge, and when Steve got hit, Steve's head actually hit, Dave Fiore's leg. It wasn't a helmet-to-helmet hit or anything, but I think it might have been a culmination of other hits, throughout his career. But the first time you realize this could be serious when I was watching, I was kind of down on one knee, down low, just watching. I kept saying, get up, Steve. And then Derek Dees starts waving. He starts, come out here. I'm like, oh no. And so trainers, of course, went out there, and doctors, and then I followed. It took him a while to come to, but sure enough, Steve wanted to go. He wanted to go back in the game. Of course he wanted to go back in the game. That's what made him tick. And I didn't allow him to go back in the game. He was kind of mad at me. But he was, trying to convince me, I'm fine. I've been through this before. Let's go. I can play. And I didn't let him do it. Then the next week I didn't let him do it. And I worried about him a lot. And his health was more important to me than winning any football game or anything like that. His health is the number one to all of us. And he never got back on the field.
I think that is proof positive, Steve, that, a part of a coach is to make sure that you protect a player against his own instincts. Someone as brilliant and as accomplished as Steve Young didn't want to read the writing on his own brain that says, don't play anymore. He wanted to go back in. And that just shows you, if a player like Steve can fall for that, everyone is subject to fall for that.
Yeah, that's an unintended consequence of being very competitive. Sometimes athletes want to go and win and compete so badly that their health is, maybe put on a back burner, or they're willing to take the risk. And that's the nature of the athlete. And so, like you said, sometimes somebody else has got to make that decision for them. And, Steve, remember, he was even talking with Mike Shanahan to possibly play. Remember when Denver was trying to say, hey, well, if you're not going to play for the Niners, maybe you can play for us and all of that kind of. Steve Young had a great career. It ended too soon. It really did. Even at age 38, he was still at the top of his game, I believe. And it's unfortunate, but you know what? We have a very successful human being off the field right now, and a great friend and a great husband and dad and all of those things, an entrepreneur. And we're so proud of Steve Young because he represents this Bay Area like nobody else.
So how many, realistically, think as a general manager, not just as a coach who loved his quarterback, realistically, how many more years did he have after that hit had he not gotten the hit?
I bet three, two, three, 4 years, because he was he was in good shape. He didn't have knee surgeries and, you know, some of those sort of things. And he was relatively healthy, his bones and his ligaments and everything. And I think he could have played into his 40s, just like some of the guys we mentioned earlier. No doubt in my mind.
I want to spin it to football today and just put it to you as simply as possible. Do you think that we will see a full 16-game regular season and playoffs?
I'm down on my knees praying for it right now. I hope so. You know, we're cutting back preseason. Colleges are cutting back, Ivy League, you know, the deal there. And then some of the big five conferences are saying, hey, no non-league games now. So, you know, I hope we don't have a shortened season. We've had strike shortened seasons before. We'll have to wait and see. You know, we at the NFL Network, we're not back in the office yet. We're still doing shows from home. There's a couple producers that go down there and from Mission Control, they work all of this stuff, but they're not letting everybody back just yet. And so we keep our fingers crossed. I remain hopeful. I think it's going to be easier, guys. I don't think maybe the word's not easier, but it'll be more doable for the NFL to have a football season than college, because, you know, we don't deal with classrooms and dormitories and, you know, all the things where thousands of students are hanging out together. And we can kind of keep people apart a little bit better than that, a lot better than that, actually. As far as the fans are concerned, that's a tough deal for them, because it doesn't look like they're going to be going back to games right away. We're all hoping for normalcy, but right now that looks like it's a ways off.
Steve, thank you so much. Steve Mariucci here on 95.7 The Game. Patrick Mahomes, $500 million. What'd you think of that?
He can get anything on the pizza he wants from now on, man. I mean, I remember, oh, geez, it has gone crazy, huh, with these salaries good for him. You know, Patrick Mahomes, if you guys ever get a chance to know him or meet him, such a great kid. I love him to death. And he's really good with his teammates and his community, and he's a squared away guy, man. Now, $500 million to play some football. That's the American way right now, isn't it? that's what's happening, and he's on a good team. Andy Reid, you know, is going to be joined at the hip with him for a long time, and man alive, it's how it is.
Is there any doubt in your mind that Patrick Mahomes has breathed a few more years of life into Andy Reid's career?
Absolutely. You know, Andy Reid and I are good friends. He blew his knee out skiing in my hometown over there, and so, you know, we worked together at Green Bay, and every time I interview him, I ask, how long are you going to do this, Andy? Are you going to retire? Are you going to retire? Because coaching are dog years, man. They're not easy, okay? And so he, all of a sudden, fountain of youth. He's rejuvenated. I mean, he can win 12 games a year with this guy easy. Nothing's easy, but he's getting in there for the long run right now. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes will be joined at the hip for a long time.
All right, Mooch, I got to ask, when we get to number one, who should it be? In your opinion, who is the greatest athlete in Bay Area history?
Listen, I wish we were on FaceTime right now or a podcast or some darn thing. I'm in my home office, right? I'm looking around. I got stuff all over the place on the walls because my wife won't let me put it up around the house. So it's in my office. It's in my cave. It's in my man cave. I'm looking. Well, there's a picture of Willie Mays when he was at the Mad Mariucci Bocce. He's got to be on that list. I love Willie Mays. When I was a kid, I'm looking at picture of Ronnie Lott and Joe Montana when they were at the Hall of Fame game with us. I'm looking at a picture of Jerry Rice over here. I'm looking at it. Let's see, who else? Oh, my God, there's been so many athletes from the Bay Area. I can't stand it. But it's going to be fun to listen to and learn who's on that top list, because so many great athletes coming from this area.
Steve, thanks so much. Oh, Ray, you got one more before we say goodbye to Steve Mariucci?
Yeah, there's a picture.
I don't know that he's got
on that list, I bet.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah. I'm on a list. But I don't know that he has anything left to say about Young. I think he tapped out today. The next time somebody asks about Steve Young, he's just going to look and go, I got nothing.
Yeah, he's a beauty. I love him. And you know what? How many left-handed quarterbacks are there? Not very many. And I had Mark Brunell and Steve Young. We don't have left. They don't even make left-handed quarterbacks hardly anymore. I don't know why that is.
Steve, thank you very much. Mooch here on 95.7 The Game. Fantastic stuff. We really appreciate him walking us down memory lane. Steve Young coming in at numero 9 from the audience's list. There you go. Steve Young.
Are there less left-handed quarterbacks now than there used to be? Is that true? It does kind of seem true now that he says it, but I wonder if there's a reasoning for that.
I don't think it's like baseball where there are positions you don't get to play because you throw with the wrong hand. I think it's
right.
Coincidence.
I mean, there's only so many quarterbacks, I guess. And
I mean, it's not like historically there have been a ton.
No, you're right, but it feels like a handful. Is there even a single lefty quarterback playing right now?
There will be this year, Tua.
Oh, yeah.
Tua is a lefty. That's right. I think it has as much to do with coaching from that side of the body. Like, if you are left-handed, you have to be so prolific to maintain that and have coaches coach you through a mirror, essentially, in terms of mechanics. It gets an awful lot harder. I know that if you have a left-handed child, your child's golf lessons will be about twice as expensive as the golf lessons of a right-handed child, because a left-handed golf swing can charge twice the price. It's harder to find in terms of coaching and whatnot. But it is interesting. Why not the lefty? Matt, do you have any idea if your son is right or lefty yet? Has that been determined?
No idea.
Are you leaning either way?
He sucks his right thumb and puts his entire left hand in his mouth. Does that mean anything?
I don't know. But
means he's not getting enough to eat.
Yeah, really.
When it comes to ball sports, he's still a two-hander, so it's hard to say if he has a dominant hand. But I guess if I'm thinking about it, he does seem to grab things more with his right hand. I don't know. I'm not sure.
So
there are lefties in the family, so it wouldn't be a shock.
My mom is a lefty, and my kid might be a lefty. He leads with his left more than anything else. And my wife sees this, and I get excited when he's a lefty. She's like, what do you care if he's right or left-handed? I'm like, oh.
Pitchers.
This is exactly. He can throw 88 with a left side and still have a major league career, honey.
Get him an EFIS. Yeah, he's good to go.
In five years, Rob Manfred's going to get rid of left-handed pitchers. Anyway.
You're right about that. No more left-handed pitchers. No more hitters ever pitching ever hitting. That is the world we're living in. But I wonder, if my kid's a lefty, what will that do to his athletic options? If he even wants to play sports, we're certainly not going to force anything, but we're definitely going to force our kid to play sports. I swear to God, I'm not going to force it. Think about it. If I force it, I'm just asking for a fight. He's going to be so surrounded by sports with me, it's got to happen naturally, if at all. I'm not going to force it. We are not going to force this segment a minute longer because we're already a little bit late, which means we want to tell you, coming up in just a moment, Marley Rivera is going to be joining us at 4:45 today to talk about a really comprehensive piece she wrote about how baseball needs to get it a whole lot better when it comes to race relations. That is coming up at 4:45 this afternoon. Damon Radowinkolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon Radowinkolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Coming up in about a half an hour from now, we're going to say hello to Marley Rivera of ESPN.com. She wrote a pretty powerful piece about Major League Baseball just dropping the ball when it comes to how comfortable black players have been around this league for a really long time. And it's a powerful piece, man, where she's got guys going on the record talking about some really disheartening things happening. You know, the friendly confines of Wrigley Field don't exactly look so friendly after you read some of that piece. And we will have her on coming up at 4:45 today, a conversation that we are looking forward to. She's a very good writer. And guys, we'll get into baseball here a little bit closer to her joining us. But I wanted to spend just a moment or two, at the risk of throwing the show completely off the rails today, talking about the Adrian Wojnarowski suspension from over the weekend. A lot of people are talking about it, and of course you have a whole bunch of people trying to take their overall arcing stance on what should be, shouldn't be discussed, and there's a lot of straw man arguments going on here. It is interesting. It is an interesting topic only because I think that there is a lot of right and a lot of wrong in a lot of different directions here. Where should we even begin other than, how about this? How shocked were either of you finding out that ESPN suspended Adrian Wojnarowski without pay for responding with a personal email to someone? Personal email. Wasn't like he pushed out a tweet saying F you. Were you surprised that he got suspended? Let's just start there.
On a scale of 1 to 10, I was -3 surprised. Of course I'm not surprised. The one thing I will say is I would like to stop hearing that ESPN has a liberal bias. That's all. Now, a lot of people who work for ESPN may have liberal views, but they get punished for sharing them. So I think it's pretty clear the station doesn't have a liberal bias. The corporation does not have a liberal bias. But am I surprised they suspended Woj? No. It's par for the course.
No, it wasn't surprising at all, but I have a feeling that ESPN is probably going to rethink part of its strategy based on the New York Times piece yesterday that basically had a number of people within the organization basically saying their hiring practices do not mirror the fact that this is a white-run corporation with a very definite business bias, which is defend the business at all costs. The reason why Woj got suspended and why they made such a thing of it was because the NBA has been trying to tamp this down since the day after Daryl Morey put out the initial tweet defending Hong Kong against Chinese incursion. And they have been trying to restart that business relationship with China ever since. So when Woj took the bait, the NBA, I'm sure of it, made a call. And they said, we can't have this. I'm serious. We can't. This is a deal breaker. And I think that's what ESPN responded to. I don't think it was the offensiveness of the tweet necessarily. It's that phone calls were made, because the NBA has made phone calls to ESPN in the past about other employees and gotten its way on it. So
just to be clear, Ray, why do you think the NBA is opposed to Woj responding in an email to a senator? F you.
Because it's about the subject matter. It's about China. Because that's what the original tweet, or the message was from the senator. And the NBA wants that to stop being brought up.
So in your mind, the Woj response draws more attention to the initial subject of China?
Not just the response, but the fact that it was somebody who works for a business partner of the league.
Right, right. But the reason the NBA would be upset is that Woj is effectively drawing more attention to an issue they want less attention on.
Right, because they know that the Chinese the government at least. This is not a sort of a stereotype. The government says, if you bring it up, we're going to dig our heels in all the more. And they are trying to smooth this over. And so far they've had very little success. But this they would view as unhelpful.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Quickly, that would not surprise me. But it also would not surprise me if ESPN did this on their own, because I think they've shown historically they want to be able to both sides everything as much as possible. Now, when it comes to Black Lives Mattering and the current movement, they've gotten on the right side of that, but only when the nation got on the right side of it. ESPN, like most television stations that try to sell themselves, try to sell themselves to as many people as possible. And while the NBA certainly may have made that call and that may have been the impetus, it wouldn't shock me if there were no calls made and ESPN's motivation here was just to not be polarizing.
There is so much disingenuous outrage being applied to this by people who are looking to straw man argument the whole China, Hong Kong, NBA thing and just turn it all into hypocrisy. I mean, Clay Travis and Jason Whitlock, his new favorite in-house employee, are, you know, they typed the word hypocrisy as if they didn't understand the billions of dollars that were at stake that China represents to the NBA. I mean, is it hypocritical? It certainly is. But understanding the hypocrisy is something these two continue to profess. They don't understand. And the senator who brought up, why don't you have free Hong Kong? It was a red herring. The man had no true intentions other than to stir the political pot on a hot button issue that is being cornered by one of the sides in politics right now. Okay. So there was nothing genuine. But let me tell you that the point he had is if the NBA wants to be the end all be all of let's make it fair, let's make the entire world safer for everyone, let's go ahead and truly be activists in terms of equality, we know where they were willing to draw the line. They're willing to draw the line at a place where many people are willing to draw the line. Several billion dollars means, look, we have our country all agreeing that several billion dollars means people can die. So several billion dollars means people have to keep their mouth shut is an easy choice to make. It was a false flag of caring offered by the senator. His point, however, is not entirely lost on me, and I'm not looking to give anybody over there merits for bringing up good points. You know what I mean?
It's pretty entirely lost on me. I'm not willing to entertain it when it's brought forward with so little seriousness. And I don't think the NBA is a charity organization. I don't think they've ever claimed to be a charity organization. And what they're doing now is not taking a stand on pure principle, or they would have had Black Lives Matter on courts 10 years ago or you know, whenever Black Lives Matter started. So to me, the whole prospect of that email from the senator is completely disingenuous, and it invalidates any point that he might have been trying to make. Is the NBA essentially rubber stamping human rights violations where they shouldn't? Yes. But it has nothing to do with Black Lives Matter. It has nothing to do with the Orlando bubble specifically. And I don't believe that senator brought those issues up at any point other than in response to the NBA standing up to say Black Lives Matter and wanting to put that on the court. And the notion that be behind blue or whatever the pro-cop slogan he wants on the court, the notion that that's a social justice cause is absurd. And so by the same token, I don't accept that China is a social justice cause for him. China for him is nothing but a red herring, and I won't give the argument any respect beyond that.
Don't forget that a week ago we were talking about Kelly Loeffler, who owns half of the Atlanta Dream, and got some attention for making a similar argument about the WNBA, of which she is a part owner. It is what she thinks is a good issue for her, however she defines that. And she got a few points in the polls as a result of it. The senator from Missouri saw that, did the same thing. It's not hard to figure out that when a politician has something to say about something that he or she has never talked about before, there's a smell in the air that they get said, I can make some traction out of this. And that's all this was. The whole point of whether it's disingenuous or not is, I mean, that's just sort of self-evident. A dog whistle is in and of itself disingenuous. But it got somebody to look at somebody who otherwise had not been noticed yet and who might be thinking he might make a run for the presidency in 4 years. That's all that was. And Woj took the bait. And that's why he got suspended, because he took the bait, and he took the bait in the worst possible way for ESPN, which is to drop the F-bomb on something that, frankly, he should have just let go to begin with.
For the sake of conversation, forget the origin, forget where the message came from. Just the question itself. How can a league be all for equality right up until equality means threatening its own bottom line? Is that not talking out of both sides of your mouth?
Yeah.
But again, corporations aren't there to do anything but talk out of their best interests. Talking about China was not in the NBA's best interest. Is it noble for them to make this stand? Of course not. But they don't fight causes that don't benefit them. They are like every other. They're like Costco. They're like FedEx. They're like, you know, name it. You know, your corner grocery store. They're going to take on causes that help them out in the end. China does not help them right now. And that's why the NBA, I'm fairly convinced, made a phone call to Jimmy Pitaro at ESPN and said, that's not working for us. Do something and do it now.
But again,
because
if you
have... The NBA's taken a knee on ESPN employees before.
Right. But again, if you want something done about human rights abuses in China, you're a friggin' senator. You know? I think you're actually in a position to try to make some progress on that with politics and diplomacy.
But he doesn't want to do that.
That's exactly my point. He doesn't want to do that. He doesn't care about
China. Right, and for the sake of argument, can we pretend that he is not involved? Pretend the senator from Missouri does not exist.
Well, but then then we would not even be talking about China right now, because the conversation was about Black Lives Matter and what the NBA is doing on that front. If we want to have a totally separate conversation about the NBA's business in China, which, by the way, I think we did extensively when it was a major topic of conversation a few months ago, I think we're all in agreement that this is a bad thing and it's a bad look for the league. And we wish they would take a stand on that. But I think we also understand that taking a stand on that would dramatically and negatively affect their business. So while I don't agree with it, I certainly understand why they're not taking a stand against China. I also don't see the NBA running around talking about how, listen, guys, stop coming down on China. They're doing great. They're not actually abusing human. You know, they are uncomfortable with it. Clearly, Adam Silver is uncomfortable with it, and it's not good. But that to me has nothing to do with anything else that we're talking about right now. And bringing it up now, when you didn't bring it up yesterday or 6 months ago or 6 years ago, proves that you don't care about that.
It worked because it worked a week ago. That's it. That's all you need to know about why he did it.
What do you think?
You saw Kelly Loeffler get points on it.
What do you think of the free Woj hashtag?
Whatever. I have no problem with it. Where I come down on the suspension itself is I both support Woj for doing what he did and support his right to do that and totally understand the suspension, because whatever you want to say about it, it's totally legal to curse out a senator. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with cursing out a senator, but it's clearly not professional behavior. And if Woj is F-bombing senators in a professional capacity, then ESPN, of course, has the right to discipline him for that, because there he is representing the company when he does that effectively. So I get it, but I also kind of like that Woj did it, and I don't think the suspension hurts him. And if anything, I think... there are probably a handful of people around the league who respect him more for that email.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget that ESPN cleaned out its afternoon programming because they thought it wasn't supporting the business enough. And that's the Jemele Hill Michael Smith Sports Center. That frightened them, and that wasn't even nearly as political as this was. So, I mean, the ESPN is trying to do what it always does, which is, you know, basically slalom down the hill and making sure they pick up every bag of money that they come upon. So when somebody hits a hot button for one of its biggest clients, and the NBA is one of its biggest clients, they're going to take notice. And I think they might have suspended him quietly. But the fact that they made a point of saying they're suspending him without pay just screams to me that the NBA said, we don't want like a week off either. We want this to matter. This was absolutely NBA driven because Woj took the bait of a guy named Josh Hawley, who nobody ever heard from before. And if he had never spoken up on this, would never have heard from again.
So if LeBron James tweeted out, I love Ray Ratto, Ray, your life would be forever changed. You'd be more famous than you've ever been, no matter all the words you've ever written wouldn't have gotten you the publicity that just LeBron James tweeting, I love Ray Ratto, in four words, he could do more for your career than the millions of words that you've already written yourself. What does it mean that LeBron James is saying, get Woj back in here?
He said earlier on that, I mean, he came out in favor of Daryl Morey for about a day and then rethought his position when he realized that was his money that was getting messed with and changed his tune. It's a safe stance for LeBron James. I mean, it's senator from Missouri who doesn't matter. It's an easy target. It wins him points. I mean, it's just, and I also think that he believes that, you know, ESPN probably overreacted and that the NBA probably overreacted. But it's a throwaway tweet for him. I mean, it's not like he's going to refuse to practice until Woj is reinstated. I mean, it's a free and easy one. And, you know, good on him for saying it, but, you know, it's not really binding in any way and neither benefits Woj nor harms LeBron.
Yeah, but the suspension isn't really binding either. Because let's talk about what Woj actually does when he's working. He's just working the phones.
He's making phone calls.
He's texting people. You think he's going to stop texting people in the NBA when he's on suspension? No, it just means he's going to have to like slip the breaking news that no one else is getting besides Shams to other people at ESPN. Or maybe he'll slip it to people not at ESPN as a little finger in the eye. But I just don't think this changes Woj's life hardly at all in the short or long term. So this is all going to end up being much ado about nothing, fundamentally.
One of the funnier things I saw was, how did Shams not break that news? That would have been one of the all-time heel turns if Shams had broken the news. That Woj had been suspended. That would have been the ultimate Shams bomb. Totally missed a good chance to up that rivalry right there. By the way, that's like Yankees-Red Sox-level rivalry. It's the hammer and the nail really are not rivals as much as we pretend them to be. Woj is still the man. And again, LeBron James stumping for him. Free Woj trending on Twitter, for goodness sakes.
He gets street cred for this. And I think that might be worth more than anything else in terms of what's happening to him in this situation.
Yeah.
I think he had street cred.
Agreed. But this just boosts it.
I mean, it's one of those things. Like I said, it cost LeBron James nothing. And it's not really something that, you know, Woj can go back to ESPN and say, you know, LeBron says you have to like me. Now, if they were trying to do business with LeBron specifically, and they were trying to, you know, maintain their business relationship with the NBA, that would have been fun to watch. But what we have right now is, you know, LeBron is just throwing out support for somebody that he could, you know, he could benefit from a good relationship with down the road, maybe once or twice. But the ESPN is more worried about the NBA, and the NBA has muscle again over ESPN, and they just flexed it.
888-957-9570. Some calls coming up as we get into our 5 o'clock hour here on 95.7 The Game. But when we come on back, we're going to say hello to Marley Rivera of ESPN. She put together a well-researched it's a lot to read in terms of how many black players have just been treated horrifically around the ballparks. She's got guys going on record. She's got guys sharing stories, sharing tears coming off. These are grown men who can't believe what is being shouted at them. It's really something else. Matt forwarded this on today when we were prepping for our show. I read it and I was like, man, this is something else. And we're going to talk to her about this piece when we come on back here to 95.7 The Game. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
With all that's going on with the bubble in the NBA, with the NFL having a big name change, at least start its course to a name change officially this afternoon. We've had an awful lot to talk about. Have not spent nearly enough time talking about baseball. By the way, Giants baseball is 10 days away from starting its season down in Los Angeles. So today we were all on ESPN.com looking at previews, looking at upcoming season predictions, and should there even be a season at all, and stumbled upon a story that was too good to not talk about. With its author, Marley Rivera, ESPN.com wrote a heck of a piece about just some real racist nonsense that is still ever present. And she got more guys to go on record about experiences. And it was a powerful piece. And good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game is Marley Rivera. Thank you, Marley. Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky here this afternoon. Really appreciate you joining us today. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for you guys for having me. I truly appreciate the kind words.
No, it was such a well-done piece, and you really got some personal stories. Which story basically made you realize, like, I've got a full piece here. I'm going to need more than 1,000 words. This is big.
I have to tell you that there wasn't one particular one. Unfortunately, the process of doing this was very, very hard. As you can tell with the piece, even though we quoted around 10 players, we actually reached out to about 60, and these are the only guys that wanted to go on the record. So there were a lot of really heartbreaking things that I got to hear on and off the record. But I have to say that moment that we led with Freddie Freeman speaking to Jason Hayward with tears in his eyes, a 20-something-year-old Freddie Freeman, right? Not veteran Freddie Freeman. This is 12 years ago. And this young white man speaking to his young black teammate and telling him, did you hear what they were saying out there in Atlanta, in Jason Hayward's hometown? And that was just really, really tough to hear. And to hear Tony Gwynn Jr., right, the son of baseball royalty, being called the N-word with his wife in a restaurant, it really is just heartbreaking to think that this is happening not in the 1960s, not in the 1970s, but in the year 2000. So it's really, it was really heartbreaking. So I think at that point, we knew we had something that was important to tell.
How much did it affect you that you got as many players who didn't want to respond to this, that the culture of baseball and the culture of America are still as weird as they are, that even at a time like this, when speaking out is probably, I don't want to say easier, but it's more tolerated now than it has been in a long time, that so few baseball players and baseball people were reluctant to touch the subject?
I have to say, in the beginning, it did not surprise me. It is something that we are used to in baseball. One of the reasons why I really, really wanted to write about this was because I have been extremely frustrated in my last, 15 years or so covering baseball when Latin players don't feel empowered to speak out. It's something that I've been really frustrated with for many, many years. So the reason why I reached out to African-American and black players was because I actually, it came out of frustration of not hearing Latin players speak out any time that they had any issues outside the game. So in this sense, it was not surprising, but at the same time, I'll be very honest, it was heartbreaking. A lot of guys that I truly respect and admire in this game, people who you think should feel very comfortable speaking out, not doing so, it really told me how these men really feel. And a lot of them were very apologetic about saying, Marley, I'm sorry. I don't feel comfortable going on the record. And my answer was always the same, that everyone has to choose their own path. This is something that is just way too difficult to talk about. So anyone who wanted to talk about it on the record could choose to do so. So it was almost a combination of, I was frustrated because I wasn't, as a journalist, not getting a lot more people to speak on the record. But at the same time, I needed to respect that because that was the journey that those players are going through.
As you said, Marley, I think many of us, if not most of us, are aware of frankly, racial issues and inequities within the sport of baseball. So some of this was not surprising. Were there things that did surprise you when you heard them, even knowing going in that this is sort of what you were going to hear?
Yes. The fact that all of them had something to say about the minor leagues, right? Every one of them would always say, I heard this and I heard that in the minors. But the fact that it constantly happened in the majors, the fact that it happened in cities like Chicago, like New York, like Boston, like Los Angeles, these great cities that we think of as beacons of diversity, right? And this great city that I live in the city of New York, and to hear that it has happened in places like that, that was shocking to me. Maybe I'm completely naive, right? I have grown up with a great, you know, as a Puerto Rican woman, the only Latina who is a baseball writer, right, national baseball writer in Major League Baseball. I have encountered this myself, but you want to believe that things are getting better, and they are not. And I think that's what was shocking to me. I was really kind of, it's exactly what you said. We think we know everything that's going on, but to get, you know, grown men who are millionaires, some of them, so afraid to speak about their own experience because they are afraid of being unemployable, because they're afraid, as Dave Roberts said, to be considered the angry black man, pardon me, that was just really shocking to me. It doesn't matter how much you know that this is happening, when it slaps you in the face the way it did for me, it really is quite a wake-up call.
Marley Rivera from ESPN.com. She covers the Yankees and Major League Baseball. And, man, she's got a whopper of a piece today. Whose desk, Marley, does your story need to reach for it to actually affect change?
I don't know. I'm hoping that many people at Major League Baseball are reading this. I think that hopefully there are some executives right now that are hearing. And one of the great things that Jason Hayward did was open my eyes to some people like Theo Epstein and the things that they are doing for their organization and listening to their African-American and black players. So I believe that until it gets to that point where executives are actually believing these guys, because one of the things that happened when Adam Jones, if you guys remember, when he spoke out about the things that he would hear playing at Fenway Park, the automatic thing was calling him a liar. And it's precisely what happened to Dusty Baker when he reported on the hate mail that he would get as the manager of the Chicago Cubs. So until executives and until people at Major League Baseball really hear us and really hear these players, this 60-something players say, I'm afraid to tell you what I'm going through because I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job, things are never going to change. It's exactly what Dusty Baker said. Until the numbers and until we have representatives of all different races and colors, right, up there in Major League Baseball and on the executive side, then we're never going to see change. That's how we're going to see change. People, you know, the people who can hire, the Theo Epstein's of the world, right? Like, those are the guys who can expect change, and hopefully they will.
Does there need to be a new round of Bruce Maxwell's? I mean, between your piece and the one that Howard Bryant wrote last week, the one thing that came across in that was that Maxwell felt sort of betrayed by, you know, his fellow black players, because they didn't back him up because of the culture that is baseball. Do there need to be a number of them now? Does this season, if it ever gets off the ground, does it need to feature that as a regular thing, and that, frankly, that strength in numbers now has to be employed?
But the thing is, Ray, like, I don't see it happening, right? Like, the words from Jason Hayward when I talked to him about Bruce Maxwell, and he specifically said, that was a fight that we couldn't even start. It wasn't a fight that was worth fighting. It was a fight that we couldn't even start. I don't see it. These guys right now are afraid to speak to just a journalist who works for .com, right? Like, they're so afraid to speak to me. Just imagine about putting a knee out there, right? Like, they saw what happened to Bruce Maxwell. Bruce Maxwell himself claims that the reason why he was blackballed by Major League Baseball was because he knelt. And now we hear, you know, the LaTroy Hawkins of the world saying, I would kneel today. I just don't see it happening because these guys are just so afraid. And it just, you know, using the words from Ken Singleton, we know what happened to Bruce Maxwell, and this was in Major League Baseball. Just imagine, you know, pardon me, we know what happened to Colin Kaepernick, and this was in the NFL, a league that is predominantly Black and African-American. The same thing in the NBA and all the issues they were, you know, with the guys who decided to put their shirts on that say, I can't breathe. Like, all these criticism happened in leagues that are predominantly Black and African-American. Major League Baseball that had, you know, a deficit of African-American and Black players at this moment. You know, there was a time when the numbers were in 20-25% of the players. Dave Winfield talked about it, of how every single team has 1, 2, 3 African-American or Black stars, and that doesn't happen anymore. I don't see it, Ray. I don't see these guys taking a knee. And even though we can say if not now, when, they just don't feel empowered. I just don't know that that's the answer.
Was any part of your conversations with these guys centered around what they would like to see from Major League Baseball as an organization moving forward on some of these issues?
Absolutely. A lot of them talked about it. And obviously, like you mentioned before, we had to leave a lot of stuff in the cutting floor, right? We have so much information talking to these guys. But one of the things that they said is absolutely that they believe that there can be some change, but it has to start with listening. It has to start with these guys. It has to start with believing them. The fact that they, you know, that what they're saying is true. I mean, even in just my tweets about saying, you know, what these guys are going through, I have people writing back like, well, LaTroy Hawkins had that coming to him because he didn't perform well with the Cubs. I mean, it's beyond your comprehension how people can justify racism in their lives. So I just don't know that there's any other way that it can happen besides listening. And one of the things that they want is that, and not only that, to also make the game more appealing to young Black men and to young African-American and Black fathers who actually bring, you know, and mothers who bring their children to the game. And not only that, we know baseball is a very expensive game. And one of the things that has happened, you know, is that the African-American and Black players are being, you know, their places are being taken over by cheap Latin American labor. And that is another way in which can maybe foster the African-American athletes that they actually find their way back to the game, because what's happening right now is shameful. I mean, if we sat down, you know, Jackie Robinson must be so offended by the fact of the dwindling numbers of African-American and Black athletes at this point in baseball. And Major League Baseball needs to listen. And that is the one thing that they want. They want Major League Baseball to appeal to players like them. And not only that, to understand that this is still a problem. We're never going to solve a problem if we don't admit that we have one first.
A powerful piece full of player testimonials. I would urge anyone listening to check out Marley Rivera's piece on ESPN.com. May we, but for a moment, just ask you a little baseball. And we are watching, you know, the days tick away and teams not even able to get workouts in due to testing delays. It has been stumbling out of the gate. I think that's a nice way to say Major League Baseball is approaching this. What do you think of the chances of this season actually happening as scheduled right now?
I have to say right at this moment, I am in that silly 50-50 line, right? Like, a lot of people would be like, oh, great, Marley. You just told me it either happens or it doesn't. So that's just how I feel today. Some days I feel really depressed about it, and I feel like, you know what, this isn't what we should be doing. Not only that, there are people who are waiting weeks, if not, days, if not weeks, to get their own coronavirus test results. While in baseball, we have constant access, you know, every 24 to 48 hours to these athletes getting access to this testing. So a lot of the time I think, well, this is what we need to do. We can, you know, we can inspire America with baseball. And, you know, I live in New York City. I have had, you know, I've lost people to COVID. And it's one of those moments when you actually sit down and you go, maybe we need some joy. And then other times you think about this, you know, 100 plus page operations manual, and you think about all the protocols and regulations and everything they have to do. And every other day, another player testing positive or a player opting out, you know, entirely their right to do so under this pandemic. So every other day, I feel like, how are they going to pull this off? But, you know, to be consistent, I said, if the next 2 weeks we have enough, you know, enough players healthy to get through these camps, then hopefully we will have a season. But I just don't see it as a very viable thing the way the testing is going on right now. If it changes, if it improves, then maybe we have a chance.
Marley Rivera, ESPN. Thank you so much for joining us. It was really a great conversation, excellent piece, and we thank you for your time this afternoon.
Oh, it is my pleasure. It's just a true honor to be on with you guys, and I give my best. You know, tell Ray Rado not to give you guys too much trouble. He's always one of my favorites, so it's always so nice to speak to everyone over at the Bay.
Really? Why? I mean, let's just ask that question. Why is Ray Rado one of your favorites, for goodness sakes?
He used to leave me envelopes in the Oakland press box with some money, and I always appreciated that. So, and also, he's a big fan of really good Mexican food like I am. So that's where our conversation centered around.
Oh, my God. Ray, should we tell her? Should we tell her?
She ruined the whole thing. I don't want to discuss her anymore. Get her off here.
There we go. I'll tell you what, Marley, we do want you to stick around only to hear Ray Rado read a top-of-the-hour station identification. This is state-of-the-art. Listen to this.
My night has been made. I'm recording this.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.